speaker will be Proctor Thompson, Professor of Economics at Claremont Men's College. Speaking to the converted as I am, and acknowledging that other speakers have already said a great many things about the topic, I wish to focus on only two aspects of the now permanent crisis. One, are we at the threshold of a long-run limit to energy and to many other substances as well? And two, and a rather different question, granted the egregious folly of price controls, why do people accept and even demand them so that blatherskites in high places curry favor with the electorate by elaborating on the indecencies which they are about to commit on behalf of the people? First, the first question deals with the economics of supply, the second with the sociology of error. Looking at the long-run supply of energy, we operate on five different margins in extracting any substance, whether energy or any other, from the surface of the earth. Margin number one, of course, is extraction of known deposits using known methods of mining. And another subhead under extraction, known deposits using new methods of mining. Harvey Seeley Mudd, the only man on the West Coast that could call up New York and get $10 million at a moment's notice, founded a great fortune because he read the Bible and the ancient Roman authors on mining. He found in the Bible reference to mines in Cyprus, and reading his Roman authors, he found precisely where those mines were. In the 2,000 years that had intervened, they were filled with water. But using modern methods of mining, he was able to extract commercially usable quantities of copper. Margin number two is discovery. Again, discovery using existing methods thereof, then using new methods. Competent geologists have reckoned that about a million times as many substances, about a million times as much things as have now been discovered, lie in the top mile of the Earth's surface. Margin number three is recycling. We recycle presently about 30% of our aluminum. It's commercially useful to do this because the price of aluminum for the past two decades has been roughly 25 cents a pound. Indeed, for the past two decades, we've lived in a world of roughly 25 cents a pound for aluminum, a nickel a pound for steel, 15 cents a pound for zinc, and 15 cents a pound for lead. Fascinating development in the price of zinc. Another episode, another part of the price control episode. Price controls having been placed on domestic zinc, but not on zinc sold abroad. American zinc manufacturers exported it. The result was that steel companies that wanted to use zinc for galvanized steel, garbage cans and the like, had to chase it abroad and buy it back at much higher prices. Wall Street Journal price for zinc then is 32 cents a pound, several cents a pound above aluminum. But at 5 to 10 cents a pound, it doesn't pay presently to recycle quite as much of our steel as it does aluminum. But even if margins 1 and 2 disappear, even if we run to the end of all our existing mines, and even if by some evil turn of fate no new sources will be discovered, we can still subsist quite handily by permanently recycling our existing supply of metals, using, of course, energy, which can be recycled only in part. We recycle energy by burning the substances in which it's embodied, burning the paper and burning the plastic. Margin number four, substitution. Two very different kinds of substitution. Substances with similar properties but different prices. The substitution of aluminum and copper as electrical conductors. Margin number two of substitution, substituting one process for another, which makes the material completely superfluous. The electric iron and the ironing board have been rendered superfluous by drip-dry factories. Last and final margin, synthesis. Compounds, of course, one compound from another, oil from coal, oil from wood, old overshoes and the like. Margin number two in synthesis, synthesizing elements. All the elements above 92 are presently synthetic, and the great synthetic reaction is that of hydrogen into helium, which fortunately releases enormous quantities of energy, 5 billion electron volts for each atom of helium that's created from two hydrogen atoms. And eventually, we may realize the dream of the ancient alchemists, and at a cost, synthesize gold from lead. And when we are able to transform one element into another, We shall not run out of anything until we run out of everything. And entropy conquers all. Now, for energy or for anything else, we operate on all five margins simultaneously in accord with the dictates of relative prices. The doomsday crowd and the people who believe that energy shortages result from geological rather than political disaster are thinking only of margin number one, extraction of known deposits by known methods. And they probably underestimate even margin number one. But for the last two decades, we have lived in a world of $3 a barrel oil and $6 a ton soft coal. Doubling and tripling the price of oil provides a powerful incentive to climb out on all the margins of supply. Indeed, the most promising candidate on the domestic scene, shale oil from the Green River Formation in Utah, Wyoming, and Colorado, becomes an active contender when the price of oil rises to about $7 a barrel. And the stratospheric prices of $10 and $12 a barrel will provide an even more powerful incentive. Difficulties, of course. Colorado may not wish to be immolated on the altar of progress. And unfortunately, when you take the raw material out and grind it up and extract the oil, there's unfortunately more of it left than you started with. So when you try to stuff it back into the mountain, it seeps out at the edges. But progress has its price. The possibilities of synthesis are even more impressive, and substitute sources also abound. Three predictions seem justified in this connection. Number one, the short-run price that will equilibrate the energy market, if we but knew it, is much higher than the long-run price. Two, the response of energy supply to price will be so vigorous in the long run that the next half dozen to a dozen years are likely to produce an energy glut, with Arab oil begging for customers. How dreadful. Number three, the entire unhappy episode of an artificially induced shortage followed by a prolonged period of readjustment increases the amount of uncertainty in the economy and increases also the need for flexibility plus the cost of doing business. As our children and our grandchildren read about this episode in our history, they will be filled with either pity or glee at our cries of doom and alarm. For we are the ones who stand on the very threshold of the greatest technological advance in the history of mankind, the development of fusion, comparable to the energy of the sun, even while some of the best minds of the age predict our imminent fall into a new age of darkness. This episode raises fascinating and terrifying political questions. Let me consider them briefly. Why do otherwise sensible people believe mischievous nonsense that damages the social fabric and does not serve their own self-interest? Specifically, why has the American electorate accepted price controls on energy and almost instinctively assumed that this crisis requires government to solve it? As I've often said, error is infinite, while truth is finite. The reasons for people's beliefs seem roughly to fall into three headings: efficiency, equality, and democracy. First, not understanding that the market itself is a remarkably effective computer, people seem to believe that important social problems, such as the allocation of energy, must be solved by a centrally administered plan. Second, not understanding that changing prices offers a remarkably inaccurate method of transferring income from richer people to poorer people. The electorate apparently believes that low prices for energy help the poor to get what they need. Third, not recognizing the inherent democracy of consumer sovereignty. People believe that the political process and its secular arm, the bureaucratic decision, somehow more fairly and clearly reflects what people really want in a great crisis such as this. The grave diggers of democracy would first smother it with affection before they bury it with regret. These three great errors, then, combining economic illiteracy and political sophistry, are the enemies we face.